You're listening to AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. My name is JP Derbogosian, and this is The Gailey Show. We are your answer to the question, what queer thing can I read or watch or go to this week? And today we're talking all about queer theater scene in Minnesota. And my first guest today is Craig Johnson, who is currently directing I Am My Own Wife at the Lakeshore Theater, or Lakeshore Players, rather, and then will also be directing Torch Song Trilogy at Six Point Theaters, which will be opening in St. Paul on May 4th. Craig, welcome to The Gailey Show.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Absolutely. So kick us off with I Am My Own Wife. Tell us about that show. Tell us a little bit about yourself as well, because I saw you in the Oscar Wilde, I'm great with names today, the Oscar Wilde play that you did a few years ago. That was, Craig, phenomenal. I was blown away by that performance. So I'm also kind of geeked and hope we get to talk some acting craft with you today, because that was phenomenal. But tell us a little bit about yourself first.
Well, I am a freelance actor and director in the Twin Cities, so I've been doing this around here for many, many years. I'm kind of old news, but it was just wonderful, and thank you for that compliment about Gross Indecency playing Oscar Wilde. It was actually the third time I've played Oscar Wilde. I played him two other different shows. Isn't that kind of phenomenal to play, you know, an iconic figure like that so many times? But it was wonderful to do that in Gross Indecency, so thank you for that. This current show, I Am My Own Wife, that I'm directing at Lakeshore Players in White Bear Lake, is a phenomenal and fascinating story by Doug Wright. He's the playwright, and it premiered in Broadway, I think, in 2003. And it tells the story of Charlotta von Malsdorf, a transgender woman who incredibly lived through the Nazi era, through World War II, and through the East German Stasi era with the Stasi police, and through the reunification of Germany that happened in the early 1990s with the fall of the Berlin Wall. And then she passed away in 2002, I believe. But the fact that she was able to live through that and live her identity that way is an extraordinary story in its own right. And if you look at the play closely, it keeps revealing new and different layers to her story as you look at all of these different lenses and perspectives on it. And it makes us think not only about the trans experience during that time period, extraordinary just in its own, but then it sort of opens up and you start thinking about, like, well, how much do I know about another person? How do I present myself? What do I want people to know? What are the things I keep secret? How am I going to live my life authentically? And then how am I going to live my life as that person? And then how do I interact with the rest of the world?
And it is a single actor who is doing all of the roles, correct?
That is right. Yeah. So it's a solo show. So we have a wonderful actor, Louis Ljunggren, who's playing Charlotta and about 30 other characters, including one of the main characters is Doug Wright. So it's sort of like the play is being written in a sort of docudrama kind of fashion as he interviews her and cassette recording kind of things from the early 1990s, and then finds her Stasi file and learns a whole bunch of new things about her, and then sees some other headlines and clips and new things are revealed. And it just keeps, the layers keep getting peeled away and you learn new things and you start thinking about what it must have been like to be a person like Charlotta living at another time in another place and how they managed to survive.
That's amazing. The style reminds me of the Laramie Project.
It is. You know, that it was Moises Kaufman who did the Laramie Project and assembled that with his theater company, who directed the original production of I Am My Own Wife. So it's very much in that kind of style. Yeah. And very much like Gross Indecency that we were talking about earlier. So it also has that kind of feel to it, too, of sort of, you know, different composite materials, original source kind of documentations, interviews, and things like that, that are assembled together. And we try to understand a life, a person, and a time through that.
when the stories are so big and there's so much to cover, I really enjoy the style of, you know, the weaving together all of the different, you know, the authorial perspectives, author perspectives, the, you know, the interviews, the, you know, all of this. I appreciate so much. And so I'm very excited about this production and that you're doing it here in the Twin Cities. Speaking of productions that you are doing, you are also doing Torch Song Trilogy at Six Points Theater, which is coming up really fast here on May 4th. So tell us about that show.
Right. It's sort of extraordinary. I get these two iconic queer theater projects that I get to work on. I'm so lucky and so grateful for that. And this will be at Six Points Theater, as you said, in St. Paul. And this is Harvey Fierstein's trilogy of plays, really about his own life in many aspects as a drag performer in the 1970s, and then his kind of the movement. Actually, it's Arnold is the name of the character, as he moves into sort of different relationships and really has to wrestle in the second half of the play with his relationship with his mother circa 1980 or so. Mm-hmm. So another example of a different kind of world and what kind of world some of us may have lived through or known about, but just to feel the texture of that, both the hilarity of it, the open-hearted kind of like warmth of it, the struggle that different generations go through on trying to understand the world and who their parents are, who their children are. And it may seem like a little bit of a surprising choice for Six Points Theater, which is their former name was the Minnesota Jewish Theater. So that is definitely their lens that they're looking at it through. Of course, Harvey Fierstein, Jewish, yeah. And the character Arnold is Jewish, and his mother is very much a Jewish mother. That opportunity to look at that. And I really applaud them for, you know, that kind of, you know, what we call intersectionality of looking at some of these different groups and how they intersect. So we don't have to think of the LGBTQ community as just being about that, you know, or just being about that identity, but it's how we exist in the world.
Tell me more about that applicability of Torch Song Trilogy to what's happening today and that intersectionality, because it's an amazing show and it's iconic, not just for our history, right, as an iconic moment within queer theater, but I think that it does speak to a lot of what we're going through today. So can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. Yeah. With Torch Song, a couple of the things that I've really been struck by is even just on a surface level, literally on a surface level, like what drag was like when Harvey Fierstein was doing it in the mid-70s versus today. So it's not RuPaul, it's not slick, it's not TV ready, yeah. It's not like a mass audience. It is really an act of political courage and taking place in, you know, rather, let's face it, just kind of like gross, gritty, you know, downtown New York, off Broadway kind of experiences, sort of an Andy Warhol, very grungy kind of look. Mm-hmm. So it's like the people who pioneered that, what that is, just as an entertainment or an art form, and how that sort of moved forward and became just like a personal self-expression. And then, you know, in the second half of the play, really it's like how he deals with the idea of, you know, Harvey Fierstein is, of course, such a, and I mean this in a positive way, an assimilationist, you know, who wants to say, we are not separate from the world. We are part of the world. We want the same things. We want to have a committed relationship. Marriage wasn't even a thought for him then. We want our parents to accept us. We want to be able to have children. We want to be able to create a life and have a stable community of people around us. And how to integrate that into the larger world is sort of his big project and the big project of these plays that starts with literally isolation. The first play is really just solo monologues, one-sided conversation, mm-hmm. telephone calls. The second play famously just takes place in an enormous bed. And so you have different couples just rolling around in different hilarious and touching kind of ways. And then the third one feels almost like a kind of sitcom or a very special Table of Five or, you know, something like that.
Well, I thank you. Thank you for that, because I feel like we are going through a moment Obviously, any queer person living in the United States today and in the world today knows that we're going through a moment, whether that's, you know, book bans or all of the, you know, anti-LGBTQ legislation. And every year we seem to say, and this is the year where the most, you know, legislation has been introduced. And then it's like, well, just wait till next year because we're having even more right next year. So I'm curious, though, because theater has had such an amazing ability to build community within the community and to really make change for the better. So talk to me about your perspectives on using theater at this particular moment in time to build community and to, I don't know if fight back is the right, you know, verb to use, but to respond to what's happening in the moment we're facing right now.
I think the beautiful thing that theater does is it draws people into a room, you know, so you're there in real time, you're there live, and you're sitting there all together in the dark and you're listening to the same story. And what it does, it's, I think like every single play is about the same thing. Every single play in the world always just says, like, how are we doing? How can we live together better? And it shows you usually a world where things seem right, then you find out they're broken. That's sort of the dramatic trajectory, right? Or you see a broken world and they move towards something that is more whole or more complete. That, and if it's drama, you might say, like, oh, well, we better not do that because the way that worked out wasn't so great. If it's a comedy or a musical, you might say, oh, we should be more like that. But everyone who's watching it in the audience is seeing two plays. They're seeing that story, and they're also seeing all of the theater craftspeople working on that together to create an entire world. So they're seeing that question answered in the form as well as in the content. It's like we are showing people, this is how you create a world. This is how you trust one another. This is how you're certain that the way to complete a harmonious place is through the art of theater. So that's
wow.
I know, isn't that? It's really a wonderful thing just to kind of hold that. And that is when theater works well, and it doesn't always work well, but when it works well, it leaves you with that impression that on a couple layers, I emerge from that theater and my worldview is changed. And it might be on a personal level, it might be on a profound level, it might be on a social level and how you relate to others, and it might be on a political or advocacy kind of level where you can look at the world and think like, we need to change that and I need to bring that into the world with me. And I am the ambassador to do that now.
Wow. Craig, you're blowing my mind. I've never heard it explained just like that before, but I love that. I'm literally just going to, when we're done here, replay the tape and enjoy that and really sit with that. That's a really...
And that's why
the difference that the theater can give than film or television, right? To have that dual layer, because you don't see any of the other part of it when you're watching TV or watching, you know, something on your phone, to be in that space in real time. I mean, there is
a lot of times we used to talk about it, you know, saying like, and you're in there, you're all together and the energy is exchanged between audience and performers and you're breathing the same air. Well, now since COVID, we don't want to say that. That sounds... But hopefully we can make it through that little episode. Just for both of these plays, I Am My Own Wife and Torch Song, I think about what are the ways that the LGBTQ community, how do we exist in the world to bring our authentic selves and to live all the other areas of our lives? For my I Am My Own Wife, it would, you know, I thought like, well, I'm not a trans person. We had someone on our team who is deeply embedded in that community and was able to bring that. So we felt really safe and authentic, excuse me, for exploring that. But as we started working on it, I thought like, well, this play takes place in the 1970s in Germany. I grew up actually in Antwerp, Belgium, close by. I studied German. There are a lot of German phrases in here. I can really help the actor with the German in this too. It's just like, oh, I know how to do that. Most of Charlotte von Malsdorf, her life was spent collecting furniture from late 19th century German, you know, elaborately carved mm-hmm. furnishings. And she had this big old mansion where she gave tours there. For over 30 years, I was the manager of the James J. Hill House in St. Paul. That's a 19th century mansion where I was responsible for collecting and maintaining the furniture, original furniture there, and for training guides to give effective tours of that in St. Paul. So it's just like, oh, it's not just me as a gay man that's needed here. It's me as some, as a historian, and it's me as someone who can speak German that can bring those things to the table. And that's the kind of people we all are. And that's what Charlotta von Malsdorf talks about in the play, is she says like, oh, it's good that I receive some recognition, because now people who see me on television can realize, oh, a transgender person can do work. They can contribute to society. They have just as much right to be here, and they can live their lives, and they will also do lots of other things. And I think that is a wonderfully holistic and healthy thing to bring to our community and to bring to the wider world.
So important to be doing that right now. And your backstory, Craig. Every time I hear something new and I'm like, what, how many lives have you lived? It's fantastic. It's fantastic. You know, there's some people who like don't even go across the river into St. Paul or the other way to Minneapolis. And you're like, right. I lived abroad in Europe and all of this stuff. So that's, it feels like you, all of this was coming together for this one moment for you to do this particular play and have your vision applied to it.
Too. And I didn't realize it when I took the gig, but you know, and then it just kept unfolding. Just like Charlotta's life, and I Am My Own Wife, keeps unfolding and reveals more and more.
Well, Craig, thank you so much for joining us here today on The Gaily Show. I've really enjoyed talking with you. So you have a standing invite whenever you've got another project coming up here. Like, please come on down, queer or not, because I like talking to you. And you're one of our, you know, is institutions the right word? I don't know if institution's the right word, but like you are a clear leader in our community. And I love hearing you talk about this work and what you're bringing to it and the theatrical sensibility, but also the queer sensibilities that you're bringing to it. And so it's really important. I'm so glad that you're doing this work here in the Twin Cities. Congratulations on both of these plays. And once again, tell us, how can folks buy tickets for both of these productions?
I Am My Own Wife. You can get tickets at Lakeshore Players. You can just Google that, lakeshoreplayers.org. And for Torch Song, that's at sixpointstheater.org.
Wonderful. Thank you, Craig.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.
Well, joining me now is Max Watanowicz. Max is going to be directing The Sound of Music, which opens on April 18th at Artistry Theater in Bloomington. Max also hosts Musical Mondays at Lush Lounge and Theater, which makes Max one of my favorite people, because when I attended for the very first time last month, I won free tickets to the Hive Collective, which I am going to see Winterese, seeing it this week. So I'm very excited about that. So you are like one of my favorite people right now.
Oh, nice.
When it comes to the theater, Max, you're probably like, what is he talking about? But hello, Max Watanowicz. Welcome to The Gaily Show. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, thanks for having me. My name is Max Watanowicz. I'm a performer, now a director, producer, writer, educator in the Twin Cities theater community. I grew up north of St. Cloud and went to St. Olaf College in Northfield. So I'm Minnesotan, born and bred through and through. I moved here right after college about 20 years ago, coming up on 20 years. And since then, I've just been working kind of in every room I can pry the door open into and finding my way into the sort of theater ecosystem that we've got here in the Twin Cities, which is so vibrant and so vivid. And it's great to be part of.
It really is. And speaking of vivid, tell us about The Sound of Music opening at Artistry on April 18th. Tell us about that show and your directing of it.
Yeah. We're in week three of rehearsal. So we've been working hard to get the play staged and learned with the actors. Meanwhile, the tech crew, the designers, everyone working hard on it has been working behind the scenes, and now we all come together to start putting the elements together so that we can get ready for audiences. They reached out to me, Artistry, the folks there, Ben Bakken and Kelly Foster Warder, reached out to me last summer about directing it, and it is, I immediately thought, this is not a play I would have chosen to direct for myself, and not because I don't have a great deal of affection for it the way a lot of people do, but because I had just never thought about it all that much. It's a show that I think is pretty ubiquitous in American culture, even for people who don't particularly traffic in musicals. They have seen the movie and might have seen a stage production here or there, or have been in it or worked on it. So immediately I thought, okay, not only does that sound like a really big undertaking, but also a big set of shoes to fill, given how everyone knows and loves the movie. And then I read the script again, and I read Maria von Trapp's memoir that the book, that the film, the film and the musical are all based on. And I was really drawn to how much of the story is about two people in grief. These are two sort of lost souls, this nun who doesn't belong anywhere and can't figure out where she needs to be, and this grieving widower with seven children who has exorcised music from his home. Neither of them is particularly happy. And meanwhile, all around them, the world is growing very dark very quickly. And yet, something that occurred to me the other day, just very recently in rehearsal too, is that the show is not called The Songs of Music. It is not called The Music of Music. It's The Sound. And I think that sort of refers a little bit to the event that surrounds a song, or what makes a song stick to our hearts in this way. So, so it's beautiful. It's a beautiful story. It's a beautiful score. We have an incredible cast and a really remarkable group of designers, orchestra members, you know, marketing staff, ticket office, everybody who's working super hard to get it ready for our opening next weekend.
Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
I am curious, doing the show, and there is the ascendancy of fascism during the show, did you see any parallels maybe to what is happening today in our own political climate?
Yeah, unfortunately, yes. That's one thing that actually struck me about this show very quickly, was how all the characters respond to what is happening around them. I think the children are pretty much spared the understanding of it, but with a military captain for a father, and with his possible new wife, the Baroness Schrader, and his friend Max Detweiler, the two sort of side characters in the play, functioning as these apathetic, politically neutral people, it just took on new meaning for me to watch these conversations take place, where literally a character says, "What's going to happen is going to happen. Just make sure it doesn't happen to you." And it just sticks to your heart in a different way, I think, today. I really love researching into musicals, and I love thinking about how the original audience for The Sound of Music in 1959 would have heard this story, given that it was only, you know, less than 15 years since the war had ended. That's all to say, yes, we saw, we certainly saw parallels. And given that the story, you know, is one of triumph and hope and courage when the family escapes to Switzerland. But as we've been reading it in our production, that hope is, and that courage and that triumph is sort of tempered by the fact that that this family, while it's joyful that they escaped, is also now becoming refugees and fleeing through cold, dark, dangerous mountains to a place where they know no one and have nothing. So while the show ends, hopefully, I think there's still that sense of, let's remember that not everyone was as lucky as this family, and that this kind of political people caught in the center of these huge political pieces of warfare, like we're seeing today, are very real people. You know, the Von Trapps were a real family, and real families are being affected by this the world over right now.
That is something I, even when I was a kid and saw the movie for the first time, and, you know, they're marching, or not marching, wrong word, but they're, you know, in the mountains. And I remember thinking, like, well, now what?
Right.
Like, this isn't good. They have nothing.
And if I remember in the movie, it's like a gorgeous sunny day, and they're marching in, like, you know, the Austrian costumes that they fled the Kaltzberg Festival in. Like, it's not freezing up there. I mean, you know, the reality of that is much starker, I think. And it's a musical, so we want it to end happily, and we want it to end with hope, but we have to also keep in mind that it's not all sunshine and roses, especially. I just don't think that's a responsible way to stage this musical anymore, especially right now.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Absolutely not. No, thank you. And I didn't realize that there was a memoir. I might have to add that to my ever-growing list of books to read.
It's beautiful. And, you know, to speak to that very briefly, one of the sort of guiding tenets of our rehearsal room has been a quote from that memoir that Maria speaks to when she and her family have started touring as a singing group through Europe. And she talks about the joy that filled her heart and the joy they brought to audiences sharing music with them. And she says, "Music, what a powerful instrument, what a mighty weapon." And it chokes me up a little bit, because I think every piece of art is equal parts joy and advocacy. We are trying to spark joy and laughter and light in people, and also trying to dismantle systems of inequity with our storytelling. And I think every musical does that on some level. Mm-hmm. Every play does that. Every story does that. Wants to pull you in with the joy of it, and also wants to make you remember that it's about something bigger that speaks to our common humanity.
Common humanity, that's a really great way of putting it, particularly in this moment. And the theater, all the theater makers that we've had on the show, I like asking them this question. And I don't know if it's a like, I feel like I need to ask this question of, you know, the theater has played such an important role within the queer community, not only in building community, but also bridging cultural differences, right, back to the heterosexual and cisgender community, such a majority, such as it were. What do you see the role right now of theater playing in helping us respond to this moment of book bans and ever increasing numbers of anti-LGBTQ legislation that's happening across the country? And even in Minnesota, we have a lot more protections here, thankfully. But you still see the pockets of the folks who would, you know, given the opportunity, would eagerly grab what's happening in Florida and in Texas and apply it here to Minnesota. So what role do you see the theater playing in helping us respond to this moment?
That's an excellent question. I'm glad you ask everyone that. Something that I really try to live by, and that I believe with my whole being, is that storytelling is the only way that we really have to teach empathy and compassion to audiences, particularly to young audiences. It's something that I have really tried to keep at the center of all of my work or advocacy or whatever you call it, whether I'm doing a Disney musical at a huge theater, or whether I'm writing my own work, or whether I'm hosting a show or whatever. I think all theater can do is bring people into a room to share a common experience in real time together. It can't tell them what to think. It can't tell them how much to care. It can't convince them to care, but it can clearly and firmly state what it believes to be true. And I think that any good piece of theater will not only make you think, but make you just connect to someone or connect to a character or connect to a thought that maybe expands your universe just a little bit, that cultivates your curiosity about someone else, that sort of expands, again, our common humanity to include maybe a couple other people, right? It's why telling queer stories, especially stories about underrepresented communities, is so important. It's why it's important that in our season planning, in our casting, in our storytelling, we expand the boundaries of what we are used to and what we think is possible and what we think we're capable of. And we just try to open up a little bit. I think that's all. I think that's, at the end of the day, I think that's what it really comes down to for me, is that's what this work is about. It's about finding ways to make us all a little more human.
That's very well put, and actually helps me segue to Musical Mondays.
Oh.
Because when I was at the one that was in March, there was a performer, and I feel badly, I'm blanking on her name, but she identified as lesbian and was talking about how she took some time away because she didn't get to play the roles that she would want to play and express the type of love that she would want to express. And so she sang a rendition of, I believe, Maria from West Side Story. And I was like crying just listening to that and hearing the story behind that. So tell us a little bit about Musical Mondays.
Yeah, that's actually a lovely anecdote, and I'm glad that struck you. Musical Mondays is a show tunes cabaret series that focuses on Twin Cities theater talent. We've been going since 2012. My friend Sheena Jansen-Kelly, who happens to be playing Maria Von Trapp in the music Sound of Music right now, and I are friends from childhood, and in 2012 we started this series, first at Hell's Kitchen, and then we moved to Lush about 5 years later, in order that we could offer more opportunities to perform for people, certainly, but also sort of the added benefit of that we didn't really see coming was that it would become a community event, and it would become not just a an industry night, but that it would become a place to share our love of this art form and to allow people opportunities like the one you mentioned to sing material that they maybe wouldn't necessarily be cast as, sing material that that speaks to their heart in a really specific way that they maybe wouldn't, for whatever reason, get a chance to perform in the context of a full show. So we choose a couple singers each month. We put them together with a music director and a small three-piece band. We give them a little time to rehearse and put a set list together. They show up on the day after about two rehearsals total and show us what they've got. I know, it all comes together very fast. And actually, what's so sweet about it is that because they all know now, I think most people that sign up for it or say yes to it have some sense of like, oh, this is... It'll be a lot of people. It's an opportunity for friends, family, community members, arts leaders to see what I've got to give and who I am as an artist. And it's beautiful to see how people respond to the prompt of like, sing something that fills you with joy. Sing something that really speaks to you. And I often say to the singers on the day, as we're getting ready for the show, you know, you can introduce the song if you want to. I think audiences like to know why you picked the song, but you can also just let it fly. And just start singing and don't say anything. And both options have really sort of generated really beautiful moments in the room of like exactly like the one that you mentioned.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you give away free tickets to other shows happening there. I mean, it's a whole evening. So tell us about the ticket giveaways.
Yeah. So the whole system of it that we set up, and I'm really proud of the sort of structure of it all. It's all donation-based, so we don't turn anyone away at the door, but it's a $5 suggested donation. All the money goes toward the artists at the end of the day. We pay the band, and then we split the remainder between the singers, which they can either choose to take or they can throw back in the kitty to go toward funding future Musical Mondays. We also now have a few sponsors who are all very near and dear to my heart. Mostly, they are just arts lovers and friends of Musical Mondays who also happen to own businesses. And in exchange for their sponsorship, we give them a little extra free marketing, and we save them a seat and all that kind of stuff. It's a pretty low-tech affair. Every $5 that a patron throws in the bowl, they can for the artists, they can write their names down to go into a raffle for tickets we give away to shows around town. We've built relationships with over 50 theater companies, arts organizations, wow, collaboratives, things like that over the years. Everyone from the Guthrie, the Children's Theater, Theater La Teda, Chan Hessen Dinner Theaters, the Ordway, to small upcoming theaters, the Twin Cities Gay Men's Chorus, the Hive Collaborative, where you'll be going this week, it sounds like, all kinds of places. And then and those folks have been very generous in offering those tickets, letting us give them a little extra marketing to a room of 200 interested arts, musical, theater enthusiasts. And yeah, that's how that all works. So it sort of inspires generosity and gives you an incentive to throw a little more in the bowl, so that you might have some more chances to win. And I can't believe you won on your first try. Nice. Very nice.
Max,
it's amazing.
We got there on time, but turns out not on time for Musical Mondays because the line was like out the door. And so we ended up sitting like right on the stage, and you pulled the piece of paper out of the hat or whatever, and you were like, oh, how am I gonna pronounce this? And I went, that's me.
From one complicated last name to another, I feel you, Joanna. I feel you.
And I remember my face turned bright red. I was like, yeah, that's me. And I was like, I can't believe this is happening. It's my first time. It was fated to be.
Beginner's luck.
But it is, so seriously. But it is a very special night. I'm ashamed to say a little bit that it was the first time in 2024 that I finally got there. But it will not, definitely will not be the last time that I'll be going there. So thank you for putting that work in there. Max, you are a delight. Anytime you've got work coming up here, you are a friend of the Gailey Show. So stop by anytime. We'd love to talk to you about future projects, or if you just want to come on and talk about the world as it is and the role that theater and music can play and responding to that, we'll have you for that conversation as well.
That'd be great. Thank you so much for having me. It's been fun.
Okay, well, joining me now is David Schlosser. Very excited to be talking to him about his upcoming project. So David, welcome to the Gailey Show.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So introduce yourself. Tell us about a little bit about your background and the upcoming projects that you have going on.
Oh, thank you. I'm David Schlosser. I'm one of the founders and managing director of Threshold Theater. Threshold is a newish, we'll say, LGBTQ+ theater company in the Twin Cities. We started in 2019, at the end of 2019, and timing is everything, so the world shut down on us for a while. So everything worked out well on that part. But we stayed around, and right now we are coming back on stage, first time since 2019, with a full production of Foreplay with Threshold Theater, which is going to be four short plays, all connected together out there, that tell different aspects of the LGBTQ+ story. And we'll be at the Bryant Lake Bowl.
Okay. Well, can you tell us a little bit about the stories that will be woven together?
Absolutely. So it's actually four short stories plus one monologue, but Foreplay plus one didn't sound right. So we just stuck with Foreplay on there. So they're all written by four female writers that we received. So how it works is we put a call out to the world to submit LGBTQ+ plays, and we have received at this point in time over 2,500 scripts from pretty much around the English-speaking world off there, which is absolutely fabulous off there. We are so fortunate. There's a lot of stories to be told off of there. And then we just kind of went through the process, started sorting them out. When we decided to do foreplay on this, we wanted to be able to present to the audience different aspects of the LGBTQ plus story out there. And so we chose multiple stories that range from multiple gamuts off of there. So we have, starting off, we have Amsterdam, which is a monologue that is written from a female's perspective about her first love and a fling that she had in Europe. That is going to weave through the entire show case out there. We have Hurry Up and Wail, which is about two transgender friends that are going on their journey off of there. We have the Weird Allen Prom Queen Trendsetters, which is a very funny, cute story about two girls going to prom together and getting their hair done off of there. Oh. And then we have Bluetooth, which is a monologue about a gay man and his partner dealing with a child that is being taken to an emergency room and all the craziness that goes on around that. And then we have Just for Context, which is kind of a meta show, if you will. It is a play about a bi writer who is trying to meet a deadline about an LGBTQ show that she's writing, and the problems that she is running with it. Is she able to tell the gay story because she actually is bi? What does, how does the lesbian relationships falls into place with this out there? They're all actually really, really funny shows. They all have a heart, and we chose them because they do tell a wide spectrum of the LGBTQ plus story out there, which is the goal of Threshold.
Absolutely. Well, I am so happy that the pandemic didn't, you know, that you all made it through the pandemic, and here we are with a new show. That's got to feel good.
Oh, it feels absolutely amazing. We were really, like everyone else, wondering, how is it all going to turn out? What could we do? So we did take a little bit of time. 2020, we spent really organizing the company and what we wanted to do and how we wanted to go out and tell these stories out there. And then at some point in time, we were like, well, we just got to get out there, particularly as a new company, being able to share our message, be able to build an audience base out there. So for the first year, we just went virtual. We did play reading series off of there. We did about one every quarter off of there, which was a really fun experience. Also had a lot of hurdles to overjump on how do we do this? How do you be able to create this? So we did that. And then in 21, we were at the end of 21 and into 22, we partnered with Blackheart Bar in St. Paul, which is right across from Allianz Field. They've been wonderful partners. They welcomed us in, and we started going live and doing our play reading series live with them and hosting us. And that is was absolutely wonderful. Again, more opportunities to get these original works out there, able to give a talk back so that the writers were able to get feedback on where their stories were working, what stories weren't working, and the reaction from the audience off of there. And we slowly started building up an audience base. And with everything, we needed to wait for money. So as soon as we were able to come up with the funds, this has been, we were finally able to go ahead, build up the funds. And so this was our first show out of the gate since 2019. So we are super excited to be back on stage with a wonderful crew, cast and crew off of there. And then these writers are just absolutely phenomenal. So we are super excited.
And you are, I'm pretty sure I'm right about this, you are the only like LGBTQ focused theater company, theater in the Twin Cities, right?
We are, which is one of the sad things that happened during the pandemic. There was a lot of theater companies that just because of the nature of what happened and how it happened so very quickly, a lot of theater companies started to reexamine. Could they go ahead? Should they go ahead? Where were they financially? What was the emotional toll that running a theater company places on the company members mm-hmm. off of there. And then what was going to happen? Everyone remembers no one knew in 4 years ago how this was going to end, how fast it was going to be, all of that. The good part yeah. with having no money at the beginning is we were able to hold on. And so we didn't have any of those overhead costs. We were just starting out. So we were just figuring it out together. And so we just kind of rolled with the punches. But because of that, it is sad that we have lost a lot of that voice and that representation within the community. And we're so excited to be able to still be hanging on, to be able to tell these important stories.
Well, I'm so happy that you made it through and that you're mounting your first show. Did I hear right? It's going to be at the Bryant Lake Bowl?
Yes, it'll be at the Bryant Lake Bowl. So the show itself is going to run probably about a little over an hour off of there. So the Bryant Lake Bowl, if you've never been, is a perfect cabaret style theater off of there. So mm-hmm. it has a great setup, you know, eat, drink, laugh, enjoy the show off of there. And it just has that really warm, inviting atmosphere. And particularly yeah. for a show like this, and a starting out company, to be honest, it is a great venue for us to be able to be in. So we are super excited about that.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. I am curious. So in having all of these play readings and featuring all of this original new work, what would you like to see more of in the theater, particularly from a queer perspective, as we're moving through 2024 and beyond?
Well, the reason that I started the theater company is because I wasn't seeing a lot of cross representation in the theater world mm-hmm. off of there. This is not a negative thing, for everyone who is doing the work was absolutely doing wonderful. But I wanted to be able to create a space and a company that told not just one segment of our community, but a place for us to be able to tell the stories of all representation in our community. So that's why we are very specific that we are an LGBTQ plus theater company off of there. We tell the stories no matter age, race, religion, gender identity. Not every show, not every single time, not every season is going to cover everything, but we wanted to be able to have an opportunity, a space for not only writers, but also for performers and also for our audience members to see that wide selection of stories within our community. Not everything is about coming out. Not everything is about, you know, living mm-hmm. and dying of AIDS if you're of a certain mm-hmm. generation out there. Mm-hmm. There is much more to be able to tell. And as we found out, like I said, we've had over 2,500 scripts come into us.
Wow.
And there is a wide selection of shows being told. Humorous, sad, fantastical. So everything that you can imagine in there is represented. And that's what we wanted. That's what we wanted to be able to tell. Not just one aspect, but an opportunity for everyone to get an opportunity to say, oh, that's me on stage. I can represent.
And have any of the shows that you all have featured in the play reading series, have they gone on to be mounted in other markets or here?
They have. They've not been mounted here, but some of our other shows have been mounted in other markets off of there. So with our vision of only telling fresh LGBTQ plus stories, which translates into original works off of there, we wanted an opportunity for writers who are not being heard, not being seen in other areas, to be able to get an opportunity for their work to be shown off of there. Yeah. So some of the works have been done, we've heard back, have been mounted in other areas, other venues off of there. Unfortunately, we're just one theater company, and so we don't have all the resources to be able to do the 12 shows that we've already done the reading off of with it. But that is the goal, to be able to take those shows that we receive in and not only give a reading for the writers off of there, particularly if they're in the early stages of the work, but to also be able to give an opportunity for us as a company to go, what's working, what's not? Can we actually take this show and put it on stage on there? So that's kind of part two. We're right now in part one, I guess, of the vision of the theater company.
The theater has played such a huge role for the community in terms of, you know, telling our stories, building community itself. And so that's what I really appreciate about what you're doing at Threshold. Considering that and what the challenges that the community, the queer community writ large, are facing, right, with all the, you know, book bans and with all of this, you know, anti-trans and anti-LGBTQ legislation, like, what role would you like to see the theater movement? So, I mean, you all are playing a really important role in that. Where would you like to see the theater community and the theater movement do to kind of help build community and raise up and support the queer community?
Well, I think one thing that we remind our audiences every single time is that showing up matters. And whether that's showing up and supporting LGBTQ plus businesses, LGBTQ plus theater, also voting, also getting out and being active in the community off of there. Mm-hmm. Part of the reason of doing original scripts and telling a wide variety of stories is important is because not only once you see a story, once you see somebody on stage, whether it's a representation of yourself or a different community, you start to see them as humans. You start to see the complexity of the humanity that they share. And when you start seeing that within other people, other areas that you may not know that well of, you start to break down those walls of discrimination. You start to see people, and all of a sudden those things like banning books, banning trans athletes from participating, bathroom bills, all of the hate legislation, for lack of a better term, that is being promoted across this country in every single state and across and on the national level, you start to question it. And that's what I would like to see. I would also, it was also important to us to make sure that we are representative of the entire community out there, that we are not considered a gay theater company or a lesbian or a transgender or a queer, which are all wonderful, which are all absolutely wonderful.
Yeah.
But we wanted a place because there are such silos within even our own community that we start seeing each other as well off of there. That it doesn't just have to be, I can only associate because I'm a gay man with a gay theater company. That a story of a transgender youth coming out or a 50-year-old lesbian in a long-term relationship doesn't have a relevance to me. It does. We have differences, but we are more similar than alike. We're more similar than different. I apologize.
I was following you. I really appreciate that. I feel like at times when it gets so, the attacks are coming so fiercely and so quickly and from all sides that it can lead to that siloing effect, right? And it can lead to that kind of internalizing that and then kind of turning on each other, right? Because it's just so much to deal with. And so I've just been really grateful for how you all have been approaching this work and wanting to tell stories and lift up folks and centering queer stories, queer writ large, the entire rainbow, if you will. So thank you for the work that you're doing. How can people get tickets?
So the easiest way, you can either go to Bryant Lake Bowl. Their website has it. Also Threshold Theater. So we also have a link on our website as well. You can follow us on Facebook, Threshold Theater, MPLS. You can follow us on Instagram as well. So we're on all of the social medias, all of the, you know, science sites out there. But the easiest way is either directly at the Bryant Lake Bowl website or at thresholdtheater.com as well.
Well, David, I have really enjoyed this conversation. So anytime that you all have projects coming up, mounting new shows, doing play readings, please, you have a standing invitation to come back on The Gailey Show, and I hope to see you soon.
Wonderful. Thank you very much for having me on. I appreciate it very much, and I will definitely be back. So
looking forward to it. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks, everyone, for listening and or watching on YouTube. Our podcasts are executive produced by Jim Pounds, creative and accounting support provided by Gordy Erickson, production, distribution, and marketing support provided by Brett Johnson, Chad Larson, Laura Hedlund, and Jennifer Ogren from AM 950. You can find us on social media. Search for This Queer Book Saved My Life on Facebook. On Instagram, we're at This Queer Book, and we are at @_Gailey Show. Follow us on Instagram. We post preview interview clips from upcoming episodes before they air on the radio. For The Gailey Show, check out our YouTube channel, unless you're watching us there right now. We're also on AM950's YouTube channel and Facebook page. And as always, you can connect with us through our website, thisqueerbook.com. On our website, you can leave me a voice message of the current LGBTQ books, films, or TV you're loving right now. And if you send me a message, I will play it on the air to share with our community. And if you have LGBTQ entertainment news with a Minnesota angle, email gaileyshow@thisqueerbook.com. And until our next episode, see you queers and allies in the bookstores.